That means it's going.
It's
do 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 do. Okay, so this isn't going to be, from a technical perspective, our best show. Let's just get this out of the way. That said, you are listening to Rose City Politics. Kieran here, joined by Doug. Doug, how are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. Now that I've resigned to my fate of what, you know, this is what we got, I'm fine.
Mark Boscarial, full disclosure, is here this evening. He'll be joining us in a moment. He's actually checking to see if we're streaming live at this point. So I'm just going to be honest with you, folks. We are struggling through this show, but we're going to do our utmost to deliver what we do here at 8 o'clock at Rose City, on Wednesday evenings. And what we've been doing for years is to sit down and talk about some of the issues impacting Windsor and Essex County politics. So thank you for tuning in this evening, or logging on, I should say. Still stuck in that radio jargon, but you know, I'll get the podcast lingo down. On our agenda this evening, and so in my show tease, if you've seen it, Doug, you probably haven't because I literally just posted it. I said tonight is going to be an historic show.
Okay.
And the reason it's historic is because we're going to just talk about some history kind of stuff. So it's historic in that respect, right?
So I've got a few things here.
To warn you, I was out there. The sound levels did seem fine, but it did cut out for a minute. So if there's a gap, if there's a thing, we'll be watching Facebook or Twitter. So please send, but the sound came back in. Please message us if you hear anything.
Yeah, and we promise not to whine about the audio the whole night if you promise not to do that either, dear listener. Okay, so I did prepare some stuff for us to talk about tonight. So we do have the refurbishment of a streetcar. It's a this file I'm kind of calling Drew's Trolley Folly, but we'll reserve judgment. The Sandwich Town Arch,
also historic.
Yeah, this
see,
right,
see,
there is,
see,
there is a theme.
There's a theme here.
Okay. Windsor Express plead for a new rent-free deal at WFCU.
Historically, that's been their position.
And, LaSalle residents could see a 3% tax hike in 2018.
That's, you know, making history.
Making history. Okay, so that having set the table, that's kind of the stuff on the agenda. But let's start with the trolley issue. So this is a Brian Cross piece from the Windsor Star. Mayor Drew Dilkins hopes City Council will approve a $750,000 project to refurbish one of Windsor's last remaining historic streetcars. So the upshot here is that there is a somewhat decrepit and rotten streetcar sitting in a storage barn on University Avenue. That streetcar has to be out by November 9th. It has been offered to the city. The streetcar has been offered as a donation to the city. The city is considering using a restoration firm. Now, something I find interesting here, RM Auto Restoration of Blenheim, who I was talking to some folks about this today. I understand they have a sterling reputation. They have been approached about restoring the streetcar. What I find interesting about this, and let's start here, city staff are recommending going with RM Restoration instead of going through the tendering process. So how do you guys feel about sole sourcing a $750,000 project?
It brings up the broader problem of this has not been thought through. This is a half-baked idea at this point. I feel like I could get behind this. I love, as much as, you know, we've cried foul about, you know, misallocation of resources, and we have to address the real problems in this community with respect to, you know, the unsexy issues of water management, sewers, all of those kinds of things. This is a project that could be attractive to somebody like myself who thinks it's important for us to be able to tell our story. The thing is, this is seemingly coming out of the blue, and I know there's some reasons for that. But you know, so there's been no priming of the pump in terms of let's think about whether or not this is something that is part of our history and how much we want to tell. And then you compound sort of that, I don't want to necessarily call it an error, but you compound that approach with this idea of sole sourcing the tender. And I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to go down that road. If indeed this RM restoration company is the best in the business and is going to give us the best value for our dollar, then let them win in a competitive bid process.
RM is the best. Don't make no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But here's my issue is that, because I do agree with you, but for different reasons. And the different reasons that I agree with you is I do believe in exceptions to the rule if it's warranted. However, this is an exception to the rule. This is the pattern of not following the process. So, you know, we saw the 39 recommendations from the CIP the other week get split up, which I don't think was part of the process because they didn't vote on that being split up. We see process being ignored again and again and again, and this is just one more instance of process being ignored. We just saw the Christmas tree lights got split over 2 years. Now, that was sold to counselors on being a wow factor. Well, maybe they would have voted differently had they only got a half wow factor. So, but now I want to say my point is we just broke the seal on changing this Christmas lights. It's going to be deferred and taken over 2 years. Why not do it over three and have a trolley? I mean, now that you've done that, what's the difference? If you're going to play fast and loose by the rules, use your now the Christmas tree fund has become a slush fund. The Christmas lights is a huge slush fund.
So that's fair, and I think we should quantify that this is one quarter of a Christmas light extravaganza. Yeah. That's the new metric of spending at City Hall.
But now we just pull from that Christmas light fund to do $1.5 million of something else this year. So if we get, so the Christmas light fund is yet another slush fund that we draw from when we want our pet projects and that. Well, if you want your pet project, get it from your own damn slush fund.
The other problem that I have with this, and it speaks to why there hasn't been a broader and longer discussion around this, is this is an 11th hour rescue job that the city is being asked to come in and perform on behalf of George Sofos and Van Nifros. Their deal, or the whole issue, and let's go back to the whole, I don't want to go back all the way to the beginning of the Junction saga, but that property has been much ballyhooed over the years. And we were just over a year ago, there was a lot of publicity around a big project that was going to happen on that site. And it was a topic of discussion on this show. Where we talked about the restoration that was going to happen, and there were some problems with some heritage aspects of the structure that they were renovating being done without proper permits and all of that. The city was upset about that. Actually, this goes back a few years ago now that I'm thinking about it, because I remember that issue was under was handled by Mayor Francis, and he expressed in no uncertain terms his displeasure with Mr. Sofos and Van Nifros. About how they had chosen to proceed with some of the renovations that they were doing at that in that location. There was an attempt to turn that facility into a medical complex, and it apparently has fallen through. And they've now sold the building, which is there was going to be a restaurant in there, and that's where the streetcar comes in. The streetcar was going to be part of the motif, if you will, of this new restaurant. That the whole deal has fallen apart. They've sold the building. There's new owners that are going to take ownership, I believe, sometime in early November, which is now putting the pressure on us as a community to buy this, as you called it, decrepit streetcar.
Now, what I've heard, and I haven't spoken to the proponents directly, but what I have heard is that storage is not an issue, that there is a location that the streetcar could go to if the city didn't want it. That's what I've heard. Okay. For what it's worth. I guess my view on this is, let's take a step back. I don't think there's a problem with the city accepting the donation and storing the streetcar. I don't know why it has to be restored immediately. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's so. And I want to further say...
Well, my answer is the election again.
Okay, well, and that's fair. If we're thinking about the history of this community and we're thinking about spending money to honor the history of this community, let's talk about some commitments that have already been made that haven't really been followed through. And I want to talk about the Lancaster Bomber. So the Lancaster Bomber has been in storage at a hangar where I understand the public can go visit it, but it's in a hangar at Windsor Airport. There is a nonprofit group that is working to restore it. And if memory serves, the city funds that nonprofit group to the tune of $10,000 or $15,000 a year. It's a five figure number.
I held up 10 fingers only to say I think the timeline for the full restoration is like 10 years.
But my point is that I think my concern is that the resources don't exist. We have a nonprofit group trying to raise money to buy parts for a plane that continues to deteriorate. So if we are going to spend $750,000 on a trolley, are we prioritizing the restoration of this trolley over the Lancaster? And is that reasonable? Is that right? Is that trolley more an important part of this city's history than the Lancaster bomber?
That's debatable because we were the first thing, it's a debate that should happen. It's debatable, but a debate that's being overlooked. I do recall, and I wish I remembered the details, because it was got to be almost 10 years ago, where a group came before the DWBIA and asked about restoration of a locomotive, and they had a plan, and it was a historic locomotive as well. It wasn't a train car, but they actually have a parts, and they're working on it with a 10-year plan. This project exists somewhere. I don't know the details of it. I think the Historical Museum knows more about the details of it. But again, it's another project similar to what Doug is talking about that could be of equal importance, could be more or less, but it's a debate that we're not having.
Yeah, I I think we all kind of are in a bit of the same space. It's like, this is interesting, right? And it is. It's an interesting aspect of our history. And Mayor Dilkins, to his credit, when they uncovered the trolley tracks for the traffic circle that they're building in Sandwich Town, as you know, asked that they be preserved and with this kind of vision in mind, right? So I see where he's coming from. I understand, and I think he has a genuine interest, and even I would even be willing to say passion for the history of our community. He kind of shows that time and time again.
Sure.
And this falls into that basket, and I think he's excited about this, and I think he's coming by this in his desire to sell this project and maybe even oversell this project. He's coming by it honestly. He really wants to do it. I just have some problems with some of the characters involved, because I've seen some of the things that have happened and where the community's been promised certain things and overpromised certain things and under-delivered on it. And then now it looks to me like we're kind of bailing them out, which is fine, but at the expense of other priorities that you guys have both pointed out. And again, it seems rushed. It's like, we got to make a decision on this next week. I just found out about it now.
And again, and is this vote going to fall 6-4 again? Is it going to fall to the same 6-4, these fiscal conservative people playing fast and loose with spending the money again, yet again? I mean, this whole full fiscal six, I hope people catch on to this, because I'm getting sick of them having the mantra of trying to care about taxes and that. It's really frustrating.
I think an excellent point was made online by a listener to the show. I believe a Patreon subscriber, actually, Melinda Monroe, made the point online on this discussion that it's really hard to go to city departments and ask them to continue to squeeze on their spending and hold the line and cut department spending once again in order to deliver the lowest possible tax increase, at the same time as we're going out and spending $1.5 million here on Christmas lights, $750,000 there on a trolley. I think it's an excellent point. It is pretty unreasonable to go and ask a department to, you know, do their best to deliver services without the staff that they need, without the equipment that they need, without refurbishing the equipment that they need, but we have money for pet projects. I will meet you here, though, Kieran. I think this is far from the worst idea the mayor's ever had. It's far from the worst idea he's had this month, as a matter of fact. I don't hate this. I just think we need to slow it down. We need to deliberate. We need to talk about where it sits in the priority list. Maybe put it in the budget and talk about what it's going to cost us in other areas, that what the opportunity cost of investing in this trolley is, and then go from there. I don't see any need to rush this or make a decision right now.
Well, I'm going to agree with that 100%. So I don't think there's any daylight between our positions. I think it's 100% agree
There's no reason to rush. If you want to give, if you want to give out $100 or $100,000 tax receipt, I didn't even know the city had the power to do that. By the way,
look, charitable tax receipts. I've seen.
So that's interesting.
I have $100,000 pet rock.
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
But wait a second. I just want to make one point clear too. Is I'm a big supporter of what Van and Nifris and George have done. They restored that building. There's a lot of work they did above and beyond what they were required to do historically, especially with the brick, especially with the thing. So they.
Wait. Above and beyond, or beyond what the city wanted them.
No, the city, the Heritage required so much, and they actually exceeded what they had to do. There were some issues where they didn't meet some criteria about like a supportive wall, and the reason they didn't meet this criteria was because they went above and beyond what the criteria was and did it better and did it more using the original brick. So I don't know the exact details of it, but I do know there's some instances. George took me for a tour of the building years ago. He's invited me again. And you'll never see a man more proud of what he's doing on that. I really am impressed with it. So I saw him, the way he was treating it like I think someone would treat their own home. And so I don't think that these people are at fault. They're trying to do what they think is right. But that's why we have the processes involved. And that's why we should follow the processes. But it's not, you know, let's not look. I don't want to make sure that we don't detract from these two people who are trying to do good, especially taking a chance in that neighborhood when no one else did and trying to restore that neighborhood, the money that they've already put into that building. I mean, these guys are the good guys. They're not the bad guys here. They're doing a great job, and we should lend them some support in the right proper way, following the right proper process.
Okay. So that's the trolley. Where do you guys want to go next? Do you want to talk Sandwich Town Arch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Again, I think there's going to be some process issues that we might get to once again.
So this is this piece comes to us from AM800, and it's a Rob Hindi authored piece. The Sandwich Town Arch is one step closer to reality. So on Tuesday, the city's Heritage Standing Committee voted in favor of the project. The arch would be located on Sandwich Street between Patterson and McKee Parks. And depending on the decision of council, there is still a chance for the arch to go up this year. So the project is split into two pieces. There's the cultural side, planning and culture department working together, and then the engineering side, which is the construction of the arch and the funding. The cost of the arch project is in the $300,000 range, and that's where we sit right now. Now, what do you gentlemen think about the Sandwich Town Arch?
Have they excavated the footings for the arch yet? Because that could also change the costs when they start doing that.
No, and archaeology is a concern anytime you're digging in Sandwich Town, for sure.
I think it's bland and plain, but that's sort of Windsor. I don't. It doesn't stand out to me. I think the letters don't. I don't know. It just seems sort of blasé.
Again, I kind of like this idea. I think creating a gateway.
I love the gateway idea. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
You know, and I think. So I had a discussion with a number of people today. Somebody said to me, "Well, $300,000. Like, what is the main thing that Sandwich Town needs right now?" And I think the answer to that is people wanting to live there.
1/8 of a Christmas light, by the way.
Yeah. Again, so, you know, and it's good to quantify, but what can you get for $300,000? You might get a really nice, you know, a beautiful splash pad in Patterson Park, maybe. Does that bring some more people into the neighborhood versus something like this? That's a good question. I see, and I'll, sorry, Mark, I just want to finish this point.
Sorry.
I see this arch, though, as a more important piece, a component to the larger brand that Sandwich Town definitely needs to create for itself. There's some kitschy wall art. There's the Brock statue. As much as that's been vilified, I think once people see it, that's going to start to help tell that story of what's gone, what Sandwich Town really represents. And the arch, you know, whether it's a done to death kind of symbol, it still is a gateway, and it's a marker that. And the problem that I have with it is that you don't have the community sold on it yet, and it's already out there. And you have some of the leaders in the community in Sandwich Town already, quote unquote, poo-pooing on it, when you should have been able to bring those folks are easily identified. If you brought him into the process earlier, you could have had some champions instead of having to fight this, and you're already fighting.
Okay, so I have got a different take on it a little bit with you. I don't disagree with you, but except for when you talk about the arch in and of itself, is it the priority or not? When we had an international panel of experts come in from the International Downtown Association, they sent us on a field trip to some different cities, and Kalamazoo was one of the cities they sent us to. And what they did is they used that trip to explain to us that about the sense of place. And it wasn't about a gateway marker. It was about a gateway marker combined with the wayfinding signage, with historical markers, with the different plaques, maps showing you where to go, signage. And once you had all of those, you developed a sense of place. So it's not about the gateway by itself. It's about having all those components as a sense of place. But what I'm lacking is there's no overarching strategy for the gateway marker. The gateway marker should be part of a package of all these things. Now, it doesn't mean you have to do all these things this year, but it still should be part of, this is the strategy. We want gateway marker this year, wayfinding signage in 3 to 5 years, this much. But if it was done as a package, then you could sell it as a vision. Why aren't you selling the leaders? Because you're not selling it as a vision. You're selling it as a gateway marker, not part of a package that creates a sense of place.
I think you're right.
That's a good point, Mark.
I think it's an excellent point. Number one, you got to get the community on board. And number two, I'm getting tired of one-offs. We have so many one-offs that erupt seemingly from nowhere. And now we have this thing that's sitting in front of us and we have to talk about it in isolation. Is the trolley a good idea or a bad idea? Is the arch a good idea or a bad idea? But if we had, as you say, a strategy for branding Sandwich Town, a strategy for what we want to do in Sandwich Town in terms of attracting residents and visitors, and we could identify, you know, the process that we have gone through to identify the priorities for branding Sandwich Town, the arch is number three, right? And it fits into the budget, and let's do it this year, and whatever, whatever. And we can feel good that we're moving the ball forward on a plan. But let me suggest this to you guys, and let me just try this out. I think that this, the reason that we see these sort of scattershot ideas coming out is that there's a greater concern for the headline than for the outcome. I think that this, a lot of times good ideas are brought out before they're baked by a mayor who is hungry for good publicity at certain times and the right kind of headlines.
I almost thought you were going to say a DWBIA chair. You could have
been. But I do think that sometimes the mayor's desire to get a headline on this particular day, to change the conversation on that particular day, is getting in the way of a more orderly approach to rolling out these projects in a way that is coherent and makes sense and gives us a chance to discuss them as a community.
Mm-hmm. And just to close out one point, too, I agree with you. When you go to these cities like Kalamazoo and some of these cities that have a real good sense of place, it's hard to pick out an individual thing that gives it that. Something just feels right, and it is the collection of all these things put together. And people have to start getting by that and stop debating, like you said, the one-offs. The one-off, it's not about that. It's having it part of a strategy. And that's what we're lacking. And you know, and it's funny because the mayor did talk about that. He talked about having that 20-year vision and 20-year strategy. Where did it go? He was right what he said.
So, in that, I think that's a great point. Where in our 20-year vision, where in our strategic plan for the city that we spent time and effort outlining, where does branding Sandwich Town fall? And what proportion of our discretionary resources should it consume? Is Sandwich Town a priority over some other neighborhood?
And what we're going to do is instead of focusing on one area where it could actually have an impact, we have to divide it up equally between every ward so everybody gets their little share. So instead of doing one thing right, we do 10 things half-assed, and then we want half credit for doing stuff. See, you can't ask for half credit for doing something half-assed. Either you do it right or you don't do it right at all.
Bottom line, the consultation would have helped to develop the strategy too. So these things work in tandem with one another. And the problem, again, just going back to sort of just reiterate my point, not doing the consultation, people feel like they're on the outside looking in. And especially, so if the idea behind this arch is we're going to help to brand Sandwich Town, and you haven't had that discussion with the people that live there,
You can't brand my community. I'm the one that brands my community. I am my community. We are. So outsiders coming in telling other people what who they are, it's not usually going to fly, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, and now you have the now you have it. You have people who are out there speaking against something, and you raise a really good point, Mark, about the broader strategy. People don't understand what's going on. Then the first thing they're going to turn to is look at that $300,000 or whatever the number is.
What's the gateway going to do? What's that thing going to do?
And look how much it's cost and whatever number that is. Well, here's what I would do with $300,000.
Sure.
Right. Now show it with an artistic rendering of all the components of Sense of Place, mm-hmm. with the gateway markers, with the wayfinding signage, with different historic markers mm-hmm. that show, that describe Sense of Place. And to put that all together in one shot, now you have a Sense of Place, and you say, how do you like this compared to nothing? That's the way you sell it.
But you know what? So in the city's defense, some of that is in the report, mm-hmm. right? And the problem is that some of those folks that went, and there were people who attend from Sandwich Town who attended the planning committee report mm-hmm. or the planning committee meeting that dealt with this recommendation. And there was some of those, like, these are some of the elements that we're looking to include.
We know how to do it. I know that.
And the thing is that they were never involved in the discussion until it was put in front of them at the time that there's going to be a vote. Mm-hmm. So granted, it's still just a subcommittee vote, but
whatever happened to the Wyandotte Town Center banners and streamers mm-hmm. that we did with that? I thought that was going up this summer. So is it going against that? Are we not doing the Wyandotte Town Center that was approved? Mm-hmm. Why are we seeking approval on one project when we haven't implemented another project? I just don't understand what's going on.
Taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture, I feel like this is part of a larger pattern, and we talked about the Sandwich Town community not feeling perhaps like they're been a part of the preparation of this. Does this administration of the city have a hard time connecting to the grassroots?
They do, but that's, you know what? That's not their job. That's the elected official's job.
Sure. So then let's talk about Mr. Dilkins. Does he have a hard time connecting directly to the community?
You think? I mean, I think he does. I think this is, and I think this, when you see all of these one-offs, these PR one-offs, that's him trying to deal with those. That's how he's dealing with that. Those are the symptoms, or the evidence, if you will, that's the problem. There isn't a coherent strategy, and I think we've gotten to the point where we're seeing evidence of a lack of patience and perhaps discipline, and what that anxiousness. Okay, so let's get this out the door. Maybe this will make him happy, right? And of course, it blows up in his face or their face. And I don't want to blame is a tough word to use, but like, let's talk about whether or not the ward counselor did a good enough job selling an investment in his ward so that his the people in his community that he represents can feel good about this investment.
I really think that you're getting to the you're touching it now. I think that this is about communication between the councillors and the mayor and the way that communication flows. I do feel like a ward councillor should be the one who connects to the folks on the ground in the ward who are the organizers, the community leaders, the folks who are going to make or break public opinion in the ward about something like this arch. That's the role of the councillor. And then in a council setup where there is open communication and two-way communication, I feel like that could happen. That you could, you as an individual councillor could bring the concerns and sort of be that bridge between the mayor's office and the community. And for whatever reason, that doesn't seem to be happening.
It doesn't. And I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know if it's kind of not everybody's. There's a few returnees, but. It's Drew's first term as mayor. In this case, it's John Elliott. He's a first term,
sure.
Rookie councillor. But there's so many other instances where this seems to happen, right? Where we have, I already mentioned the Brock Traffic Circle project with, they're going to make this. There's nobody in not. I don't want to misstate this because I shouldn't paint. General Brock is a revered historic figure for the most part in Sandwich Town. A statue honoring General Brock going up in Sandwich Town, done right, would be a really, would be well received, has the potential to be incredibly well received, and it was panned. They had, you know, there was a parade of witnesses that came to council that evening from Sandwich Town telling council you should not proceed with this. That must have been a WTF moment for the mayor. How can this be wrong? I want to build a statue mm-hmm. of General Brock in Sandwich Town, and I get all these people from Sandwich Town telling me how bad this is, how terrible of an idea this is. And now we have the similar situation with this arch. Like, Sandwich Town has an incredible story to tell. An arch or a gateway into Sandwich Town makes a whole lot of sense if you already had developed a broader Sandwich Town strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see it as an easy sell, but it doesn't seem like it. And maybe as this issue goes a little bit further down the road, that some of those stakeholders will be brought on side and will be consulted more robustly, if you will. That was kind of hinted at by the proponent who's been identified in the report, that there was going to be some consultation. But the vote happened. So this is the problem. Is this, you know, the vote, that consultation happens after but also before the vote. It has to. Otherwise, you get these no-brainer things that turn into political messes. Sloppy.
Yeah, I think there's an issue, and you can see it play out differently in different parts of the community. I do think that to give credit where it's due, I do think that there is good communication, and I think that the mayor understands very well what some of the citizens, the residents of Windsor, want. Mm-hmm. I think when it's time to put new interlocking brick at the entrance of Southwood Lakes, those guys know exactly who to talk to, exactly where they can make the most impact. And I'm being a little bit facetious, yeah. but I also, another example I want to bring up is the Miracle Diamond. It just seems to me that there are some parts of the community where the city and the political leadership of the city is better at understanding what the mood and of the community is, and responding effectively to the mood of the community. That, especially like that Miracle Diamond issue, think about that. Think about the storyline of getting to where that landed. And that did not start anywhere near where it landed. Highly responsive to residents of Ward 6, highly responsive to residents of Ward 1. But it does seem like other parts of the city, solutions are imposed. They're not the same kind of connection between residents and the political process just doesn't seem to be there. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder why that is.
Well, I mean, I think we've touched on it in a couple of shows. We looked at the electoral map, you know, and I hate to go back to that and to suggest it's always just about, but I think that there's some level of, people not having enough experience in the role. I just made that point.
Yep.
But the other part of it is, yeah, I mean, where are the votes and where are the donations coming from? And I think it's pretty easy to identify.
And where are the personal relationships?
Exactly. That's where they exist. And so, and when I say donations, legal donations, those are the kinds of things, frankly, that lead to political relationships. Not the only thing, but it's part of it. It's a really good point to highlight the Miracle Diamond story. Now, and you're right to highlight the fact that, I mean, that didn't start off as a slam dunk. All know that, and let's not pretend like we're suggesting that. In fact, Councillor Gignac, and she talked about this when they had the Miracle Diamond debate at council. She said initially I was very skeptical, and even would, if nothing had changed, I probably would have been opposed. She was brought on side because of, you know, the work that she'd seen happen in the community through the consultation. Frankly, she was convinced that it was now the consultation at the end of the day in this instance was community driven, but I mean that's what the community expressed, a desire for something to happen in the area. They marshaled resources to be able to execute it, and the political leadership participated in that process, and you ended up with a great moment for on council and a terrific outcome. So contrast this. This is a hornet's nest now.
So it's, I think we're getting to a really interesting place. So there's the issue of the electoral map and where the votes are. There's the element of personal relationships and political relationships, and I think that those are true. But when you talk about the grassroots organizing that happened around the Miracle Diamond, now you're talking about the resources of the community, the resources of the neighborhood. And I don't think it's unfair to say that a relatively high income, affluent part of the city, like Ward 6 or like Ward 1, also has more and greater self-organizing ability. There are folks who understand process. There are folks who have connections. There are folks who have connections to each other. And maybe other parts of the community need a little bit more support to get that kind of grassroots activity going.
You know, so I get that. I'm not sure that I buy it 100%. I can tell you something. It's very easy to marshal your resources in Sandwich Town. You can get people behind ideas. And you can get them out to events that are important in their community. They will show up.
But think about, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but think about the Miracle Diamond. That was an issue that had to be carefully navigated.
No question that's correct. It was much more complicated than just getting people together for like a rally, a public meeting, what it might be. So I agree with you there. No question.
Yeah, it's so all of this though means that unfortunately investment in Sandwich Town from a political perspective. For the mayor, it's got to seem like a little bit of a waste, you know?
Don just piped in that if we want to really do something for Sandwich Town, we should build real roads and stop taking out community services. But thanks for the cool sign. Try to give that Delito can't win the campaign
Well, and that's... Thank you for chiming in over the internet, Don. I hope you realize everything you typed could be repeated by us. But I'm really glad that Don brings that up because I do think there's also a philosophical difference here between different elements in our community. What is the fix for an ailing neighborhood like, you know, let's be honest, Sandwich Town is not in the best shape in the world. It's not the best shape it's ever been. Downtown is not in the best shape it's ever been either. So there, one school of thought seems to be that the fix for an ailing neighborhood is to make it into a destination, to turn it into a playground. And that is the only possible way to bring an urban neighborhood back. And others, and I think that most of us who are here in this room would see it this way, others see it from the perspective that you bring a neighborhood back by investing in making it livable, investing in the community, investing in things like community centers, as Don raised in his completely on the record comments on the internet.
He just has another comment, and I'm not going to repeat it. I know he's listening. I totally disagree with that comment, by the way. I'm not going to dignify it.
Yeah. We're not just going to repeat whatever. Nice try, Merrifield. Yeah.
I guess, you know, another point I wanted to push out there, and sorry if this doesn't segue from where you were. There's context here in the here and now, and I know items don't come up on the agenda for the planning committee just out of nowhere. So appreciating that, bringing this forward in the context of the demolishing of several homes in Sandwich Town, that whole Ambassador Bridge saga, the tearing down of the boarded up homes just literally started. Now you have this other situation, which is, you know, there's the perception out there that people from the outside are going to come in and tell us what we need and how we're going to make our community a better place. It's not a good moment for that kind of thing. If there's ever a good moment, maybe it's the worst moment to drop something in from above again. on this community. They're hurting, and there's a lot of
the businesses are really suffering by this delay on the roundabout. They feel like they're completely cut off from the rest of Windsor, and the businesses say they're really. I've heard from several business owners that it's killing them, and I know that from the streetscape when I had from Chinoso's.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get into Sandwich Town off of Riverside, so I mean, if you want to go into Sandwich Town and go to like, you know, Rock Bottom or any of those businesses, they just opened their brewery. It's my understanding,
And taking those hits is one thing, but multiple shots, it's just it's hard.
Yeah, no, and for a protracted period of time, I was just driving down there not too long ago, and it was like, oh shit, I got to deal with this again. And to get into Sandwich Town, you literally have to go up onto like Peter Street and drive down that way, come in Mill, go across. It's hard. It's annoying, to be honest. And yeah, it's a disincentive. It disincentivizes people going in there. So yeah, it's not a good. There's not a lot of good feelings there right now, and this coming in was not going to be the fix. It should have been easily predicted that this could be problematic. Whether or not that should lead to a rescheduling of this kind of an issue or not, I don't know how much consideration political context goes into that. But, you know, now you got something that you probably didn't anticipate you're going to have as a result of all of these other things that you never thought about, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough time to be bringing something like this forward.
Yeah.
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 Okay, any other words on that, or you guys want to move on?
Move on.
Okay.
I missed the lightning rounds.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a slow lightning round. You know, we do have a fair few topics to talk about tonight, and I don't think any of them are a hugely dominant issue like we sometimes have, where we talk for an hour about this or that outrage that happens in council chambers or whatever. But this is one that might be interesting. Windsor Express pleads for a new rent-free deal at WFCU Center. So this comes to us from Brian Cross in the Windsor Star. The financially struggling Windsor Express is looking for a new rent-free deal at the city-owned WFCU Center. So what they're looking for is they're looking for a waiver of the per-game fee, which is $3,500 from the city. It's $1 ticket surcharge, and allowing the Express to keep 100% of concession revenues instead of 50% that they currently get. So all of those waived fees would add up to $115,000 roughly in lost annual revenue to the city. So that's what they're asking for, and what they are offering in compensation is basically a package of promotional incentives, participation in city events from players on the team, complimentary tickets, marketing and promotional services, basically tying the Express into the city is what they're offering in return. So subsidizing a basketball team in Windsor is essentially what we're talking about here. That's one perspective. Another perspective might be that that the deal the Express have is not as attractive as the deal that, say, the Spits have. So there are multiple perspectives. Mark, you seem anxious to chime in.
And it's kind of a conflict because I've sponsored the team before. I know Dartus Willis. I consider him a friend. I think the team is good. What he's asking for on the surface of it might seem like subsidizing a team, but it's making up for a bad deal, an unfair deal that was established in the past. And the one thing, and I think this is a terrible deal, I love the Spits. I think the Spits are great. I don't want to be anti-hockey, but to give the Spits concessions on Express nights is wrong. So the Express cannot make money from their... Every night, if the Express does draw a crowd, every dollar of those concessions goes to the Spits. How does that make sense in any world? So you've taken away their ability to make their own revenues, which forces them to be in this position. So you have to look at how it got the context of this. So normally on the surface of this, I would be against subsidizing the team. But because you set up this bad deal, which was secret, and it was all done behind closed doors, and they didn't want to show this the public the deal, so we couldn't even scrutinize it. Now you're forced into this position. I really hope that I do think that that basketball team, we've also done charity events with them. Again, my conflict is, and that basketball team does a lot of good for the community, more than just the public social, the things you speak of. We've done fundraisers for people with disabilities. We've done, they go out to charity events. The team has stepped up time and time again for a number of causes. So am I biased? Yes, because I've worked with them and I've worked with some really good people with them. But I'm biased because, that's allowed me to be know about the bad deal that they've been forced into. And how, where do you draw the line? I don't know. I like to see when you do grants like that, I like to see 3-year seed grants. I like to see something where it says, this will be until we fix the Spitfire gift. Because I don't know how long, how many years we're into the, it's a 20-year deal, I think. How many years are we into it now? Maybe we do something until that Spitz deal and let them get their own concessions and then let them sink or swim. But, you know, or change, you know, make it counter. I know they're trying, they're doing their best. And we have to, no, I'm sorry, one other quick point. We got to decide what we want. We lost an air show because we sponsored Red Bull. Now we're losing local home teams because we sponsor things that are outside our community. So where's our priorities? So are we going to give money to Grand Prix but not to the Express? How does that work?
It's a fair point that the investment in the Grand Prix is $50,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's more important to us? Our own local basketball team that's intertwined in our community in depth, or this? You know, I mean, something doesn't sit right.
Kieran?
Yeah. So again, full disclosure on my part, I do consider Dartus Willis a friend as well. And I'm a big time basketball guy. I'm a basketball official and have been for 15 seasons now. So, so I love the sport and I like the Express, and I agree with everything that Mark said in terms of the community involvement and community and the respect and care for the community that the Windsor Express as an organization has. I think it's fair to point out the exchange, and this is with the utmost respect, the promotional compensation that the city would get, that's not real money. And there's an element of risk there too, by the way. Let's recall that the Windsor Express had a really terrible moment a couple of years ago that would give me pause in terms of thinking about whether or not I want the city's brand to be completely, or not completely, but to be as intertwined with the Express as it might be. With that said, not only, and I think it's a big ask, it's a huge ask to think about. I don't know where the revenue for the city comes from if you waive the rent and you give them 100% of the concessions. They're just basically, you're there, they're there. But I wonder about whether or not the venue itself needs them as a tenant. There's a part of me that thinks even subsidized, yes, they do. I mean, the WFCU, without the 30 dates that they have, I think that would be I don't think they'd be able to replace those dates. And I think that there's something to be said for having that kind of activity in the building that promotes the brand of the WFCU center.
You just saw the city willing to spend $100, how much on a soccer stadium to try to bring more people here, but yet they're willing to give this up.
Yeah.
So they just said that they need this critical mass to bring in this more development, but yet they want to throw this away.
When you compare it to what it's cost us to bring synchronized swimming and diving events to Windsor, it certainly doesn't seem like it's a super onerous amount of money. We're talking roughly $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
One thing that concerns me is, elsewhere in this piece, paid attendance averages 481 bodies per game. That's a low number. In a city of 200,000 plus people, to have the city subsidizing or supporting a team that has such limited support, I think is kind of challenging. I've been to an Express game. I liked it. It was at Caesars.
I had a great time, not
at WFCU. And I think, I wonder if the Express would be better served if there was another venue available.
Well, maybe downtown.
That is a very good question. The question is where, right? Mm-hmm. And there's also standards that the league has to respect in terms of places where
they are going to have teams, venues that the teams are going to be playing at. You're not going to be able to play at a church gym or a YMCA. I'm not suggesting that that's what you're suggesting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in terms of the Coliseum, the availability of that venue for the dates, and let's it may not be $3,500 a night, but it's not going to be cheap. It's not, that is in a venue where I don't think you're going to realize some significant cost savings, and there's absolutely no, I think, opportunity to negotiate a situation where you could have a major reduction in the rent.
But everybody, I just want to give them a plug, because I don't watch ball sports like you, Karen. Mm-hmm. I have a blast when I get to go to those games. They're so much fun. That team is so much Windsor spirit in it. Yeah. It's great.
Well, I'll say this in terms of the product. I was blown away, frankly, the first time I went to an Express game, the quality of the product. It's, yes. And not just the game itself and the athletes themselves. They're high skilled players, no question about it, but they put a lot of time and energy and thought into the overall experience for fans coming in, and I was highly impressed with that. I think they, and in some respects I almost wonder if they could maybe, you know, how much they could afford to sort of scale that back a bit to sort of deal with some of their costs, you know. I don't know, some of that was a lot of
Dardis, I'll give him credit, man. Yeah. He can take a low budget and get a lot of that. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't spend too much on that, because that man is a master of getting the most out of what his budget is. I'd like to have a discussion with him is to see, you know, what else could we do to assist you? Give it that chance. Give it that pilot project year if you got everything you wanted, could you show that attendance and make those targets? And then maybe we have that talk. But I hate these half-hearted attempts, ham-fisted, where we can't do this.
Don Merrifield is just peanut gallery master right now.
Okay. We hate to be the tease, but believe us, it's funny, and no, we're not telling you.
So I want to
move on. We have time to talk
about. Can I just put a bow on that? Because I don't know that I made my position clear. I want the city and the Express to find a deal that can keep the Express in town, that can keep that franchise continuing to operate. I think it's very hard in Windsor, by the way. You talk about the low attendance numbers, 500, 450 people per game, and how much of the percentage is giveaways versus there's some issues there.
Yeah.
This is a tough sports market. And when you think about, like, the basketball that you can, just the basketball alone that you can go see within a 30-minute drive from your house. You know, you have the Lancers, you have St. Clair College, you have, this is a higher level of basketball than both of those. But then you go on to the, just across the river, and this is the big challenge in the Windsor-Detroit sports market, you know, that, and especially now the Pistons are going to be right downtown. And if you want to drive an hour, you can go see Michigan basketball, Michigan State basketball. Even Division I basketball in the city of Detroit. If you're a basketball fan in this area, there's lots of good options for you, is all I'm saying. So that makes it even more challenging. I think it speaks to some of the issues that they've had in Windsor, the Windsor Express, that is. But at the end of the day, all of that aside, I think it's really good that they've been able to develop a fan base that they have. I think that 450 to 500 or 500 people or so per game, I think that's a number that's been increasing every single year. They're to be commended for that, and I'll just reiterate my last point. I really hope they find a deal that can be fair to everybody.
Maybe so we should throw them a parade. How come they don't get a parade?
If there's a path to the Express being sustainable, if there's a path to that, then and we all can see that there's a viable path, and I'm not asking for a guarantee, but if there's a viable, high probability path to the Express being self-sustaining, then it's probably worth it for the city to support for a couple of years. But that's the key, is there needs to be a plan and a path to not needing city support.
But if we decide to pursue that path, it shouldn't be done on a compromise. We either do it right or don't do it. I mean, this whole thing, well, we'll give you half, we'll give you a quarter. No, these things don't work like that. When you solve, and this goes with all these solvents, it goes with the CIP, it goes with all these things. When you attack a problem, you have to do it from a multi-pronged, multifaceted solution. You don't just look for that one magic silver bullet that fixes the problem. You have to attack it from a number of angles. And let's hear from Dardis. What are all the different ways we can do it, and do it all at once?
I think what Mark is saying is, Windsor Express players, if you have your outdoor electrician's ticket and can string Christmas lights maybe we can put a deal together. Okay, we got a couple minutes left, guys, and there's two possibilities of where we could go. We could go with LaSalle tax increase, or we could go with racist graffiti in Windsor. Which direction do you guys want to go?
I'd go graffiti, but I just want to put a plug in really quick. Everybody watch CBC News tomorrow at 6 p.m. A great good news announcement that Councillor Borland has worked on approaching myself and the Downtown Windsor's Community Collaborative, and look for that tomorrow. I don't want to give it away. See at CBC News for a great good news announcement.
Okay, I think that's what they call a tease.
Yeah.
All right, so last weekend, friend of the show, guest of the show just recently, John Lidke.
Mr. Lidke.
Mr. Lidke.
I do want to point out he is not a financial supporter of the show, so we're going to give him a little downgrade there. But anyway, John identified he saw some racist graffiti, some really unpleasant stuff written around the city, and he took it upon himself to not only publicize it, but to cover it up. He went out with some white paint. I understand friend of the show and supporter Fraser Fathers was part of the dynamic duo that that did this. And there's so many directions to go in such a short period of time. First of all, guys, what do you think about covering up graffiti as a citizen?
So I'm not a fan of guerrilla activism. I'm not surprised by that. People might be surprised by that. I think that there's, I don't want to, I'm as offended by what they were covering up.
By the way, I think it was Fraser actually who pointed out the first graffiti, and John jumped on it and saw that.
And it's highly offensive, and I want it eradicated from our community as much as anyone does. I'm not sure that I think it's appropriate to fight vandalism with vandalism. I'm not condemning what they did. I'm suggesting that that's not a path that I would consider as an approach. But I do respect the fact that they put their money where their mouth is to a great extent, and that they are, in some respects, kind of living their values. I think that that's that shows a lot of courage and conviction, and I have a lot of respect for it.
Yeah. So he took a lot of flack for that too. Some people accused him of grandstanding. Some people did. I know what I do know. His heart's in the right place. Yeah. I know. Just knowing from him that he wanted to do good. I love how he orchestrated it. And you know what? If he did want to draw attention to it, you can call that grandstanding. I call it drawing attention to a problem so that it can not just be solved in an isolated incident, but citywide.
Yeah. I think that you raised some valid points, Kieran, about. You got to ask, what if everybody did that? Mm-hmm. Every time they saw something that offended them, they got out a bucket of white paint or whatever and splashed it on. It wouldn't be good. In this case, I think it's reasonable that a civic-minded person might not want to wait for due process to cover up hateful words spread around our city. And I agree. Like, kudos to the crime-fighting duo of Fraser and John for taking this on.
There was a third person there. I can't remember his name, but he was on the radio interviews. He came and helped John. I think it was more of that kind of a partnership.
Yeah.
Because he went around with John. And,
great.
And it was great. And it was also that, a Jewish person and an Islamic person. So it was a great combination. And it was, I'll let you continue.
I hear what you're saying, but I think more importantly than covering it up in this instance, and I think I do think it's important to think about what the right process would be for future incidents. Is it calling 311? And if that's the answer, then there needs to be a pretty rapid response, I would suggest, when we've got something this ugly out there in the community. But I think the greatest service that these folks have done is expose the problem and highlight the problem.
There's no question about
it.
What
would have been a great process, Doug, to do that? If maybe, like as for the CIP, we funded a neighborhood grant program where then one of the neighborhood grants could be to cover up graffiti managed by the residents, so that way it would be managed, rate, and processing. But we rejected that possibility at council.
So, community groups do have graffiti strategies. Ford City Neighborhood Renewal out in Ford City had a strategy of creating murals, creating community art, because graffiti artists tend not to want to tag over a piece of art. They want to tag on a blank canvas. I would suggest that the people who write hateful crap are not graffiti artists and probably wouldn't respect that kind of challenge. Honest, so,
but there's statistically, I've done some things where even though they're doing that, they still, there's a lower incidence on murals than there is even when it's not, like you said. So there, it statistically is shown that it does help.
Mm-hmm. But it's, if this incident goes beyond just the, you know, putting a Band-Aid on the immediate sort of eruption of the problem, and helps to start a conversation in this community about the challenge that we have with racism and bigotry in our community, and what the political events south of the border over the last 12 months have done to exacerbate that. I mean, this is something that if you had told me that there was going to be this kind of, and it's anti-Islamic graffiti, if there was this, that this kind of graffiti was going to be widespread across the city, I wouldn't have believed you a year ago, 2 years ago. I don't think you would have seen it. But now people feel like they have a license to express this stuff. The comment threads on the articles about this instance, but also the articles that about anything that touches even remotely on Islam or any visible minority for that matter, the comments are hateful, and they have become so much more hateful in the last 12
really
months.
Feel emboldened. Now, I also
and they're willing to be upfront about who they are in that, which is even more frightening.
So I really like the message going back: you will be confronted, and this is not what is acceptable in our community.
Now, one of the things I've always been like this is early on, there used to be an internet strategy: ignore the trolls. I've never bought into it, and there are studies showing, university studies showing, ignoring the trolls doesn't work. Confronting the trolls does. Done it with the square. I've done it with this. Also, people that may have a problem with what John did as well. The context. I think it makes more important. We just had that article about the NDP leader there.
Jagmeet Singh.
That
bullshit Star article.
You mean? Yeah, I think that's the one.
Yes,
mean.
I said
and
that.
You'd love the opportunity to bring it up. Yeah. So, but you have all these things talking about recent. So the timing was right for John to do this. I think it was good that he brought it up at this particular time. This, especially when we're trying to attract Amazon headquarters, things like this. We need to confront these problems and deal with them, not bury our head in the sand.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too deep into the federal stuff, but I do think that it's good that we are having this conversation now, and you know, whatever you might think of the coverage of it, I'm really glad that this conversation is happening in this community. I do think that there has been a tendency to ignore and whitewash and pretend that this kind of ugly thinking and attitude doesn't exist in our city, but it does, and we need to confront it and we need to address it. And I'm really, really glad that the folks who took it upon themselves to take action have hopefully made a start in having a community dialogue that is going to make a difference.
So that's my hope as well. Another point connected to the response that you've seen that I wanted to make earlier, and I'll just do it now.
Yeah, we're out of time, dude.
Yeah, I know. So I'll try to be quick. Part of the replies that a lot of people said, well, you know, isn't there better things for you to do with your time, right? Like, if you really want to make a difference in the community, you could do this, you could do that, right? And that
what
is
a,
such
what a pile of garbage.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, that's exactly
what
I'm
saying.
I always
love when people tell me, you know, how to volunteer, like, my time.
So,
why don't
you, know,
you
do that? That's exactly. Just go and do your thing, right? Yeah. If you're really so motivated or offended by what that person did and think that there's a better way for them to spend their time, maybe that's what you should do.
Yeah.
So go ahead and do it.
Time.
And just, if this person is out there doing something that you maybe fundamentally agree with, but just think that there might be other priorities, let them do their thing.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I help locally. Some people help globally. There's not a right or wrong way to help.
Yeah.
You help what makes you feel comfortable. The people that do that are morons. I'm sorry.
Well,
they're just complete morons.
So I will say that there is a right way to help. And that is to subscribe to Rose City Politics on Patreon.com. If you like what you're hearing and you think that we need the resources to have the proper equipment to bring
that's
you
right.
staffing
and staff to to bring you the show and to do the research that we need to do in order to bring you the high quality analysis that we deliver, then I suggest you scoot on over to patreon.com and search Rose City Politics. You will find us there, and you will find a wealth of premium content for subscribers only.
And more interesting, more colorful, and I think tonight's going to be a good one.
We're going to be a little off the chain tonight, I think, so it'll be fun.
Okay, and on that note, I guess we don't have theme music. This is the lo-fi edition. Yeah, can you drum us out or something? Thanks for listening.
I'm going with the Benny Hill.
Good night, everybody.